Chapter 1. A Brief History of Music Notation. History doesn't repeat itself, but it does rhyme. Mark Twain. Here, there, everywhere. When you hear something you like, thank a fish. About 500 million years ago, fish began to develop the ability to sense vibrations, but not with anything we'd call an ear. Amphibians improved on the fishy system with sac-like organs containing clumps of neurons devoted only to sensing vibrations, much like the ears frogs have today. Birds evolved the design even further. With the possible exception of moths, hearing is best in mammals. Mammals have evolved pinna, the fleshy outer ear that funnels sound to the cochlea, one of the many tiny pieces of the inner ear. The cochlea converts the incoming vibrations into nerve impulses and sends those to the brain where they get processed by systems like the cortical fugal network. It had to take over 100 million generations of critters to evolve an ear capable of hearing the ecstasy of Bach's B minor mass, the groove of the blues, or the blistering bebop of Charlie Parker. See a detailed drawing by Max Brodel of the inner ear in example 2 on the book's website. With this wonderful ability to hear, it's no surprise that we humans began to organize sounds into patterns of rhythm and pitch. That's music. A question that will remain unanswered forever is what the first instrument was. Some say drum, some say voice, but we'll never know for sure. Maybe it was something completely different. Flutes made from the bones of a vulture were found in Europe that appeared to be at least 40,000 years old. The magical powers of music, also known as the psychology of music. From the very beginning, music was linked with magic and shamanism, and it still is. Wherever you find a shaman, you'll probably find a drum. Music does have magical powers. It can transport you into an altered state, heal sickness, purify the body and mind, and work miracles of physics. In the Old Testament, David cures Saul's madness with his harp playing, and the walls of Jericho were brought tumbling down by horns. Look at example 3 on the book's website to see a picture of Rembrandt's rendering of David and Saul, painted around 1658. You might scoff at such primitivism, but do it softly and don't let anyone hear you. Recent discoveries are showing that such ideas are not so cracked as they seem. Don't believe me? Okay, here's some examples. Imagine. It's night. A cavern begins to fill with creatures that normally keep distance between themselves and the others of their kind. They rarely touch. Tonight, because of sound, they'll experience an altered state of being. Soon, there will be 10,000 of them, then 20,000, or 30, or more. Tonight, they'll crush together and groove to the music. On a raised platform, anywhere from 3 to 12 or more people stroke or bang on or breathe into instruments that produce complex rhythms and pitches. The sound causes us humans to behave in a way that's different from everyday norm, especially if we really like the band. Here's another scenario. You've had a long, hard day, and you arrive home exhausted. At home, loud and annoying music is playing, something you really hate, like your dad's vinyl Barry Manilow or your kid's Megadeth Live album. It grates and grinds on your nerves. Once it's turned off, you heave a deep sigh, and a peacefulness settles over you. You put on some of your favorite music, say that Barry Manilow record, or maybe that Rockin' Megadeth Live CD, and the relaxation deepens. This is music therapy. Music therapy has shown positive results in people undergoing cardiac rehabilitation and drug rehabilitation. Music has also helped people who suffer from asthma, depression, high blood pressure, migraines, and ulcers. Music can also help with the production of melatonin, an important chemical in the body. The use of music therapy in healing has gained much credibility, and its use is increasing as we test music's effects empirically. There's more. Ella Fitzgerald breathes deeply, begins a high note, and holds it. She sings with power and confidence and clarity. A tall, empty champagne glass sits on a stool nearby, and it begins to vibrate with her voice. Ella's voice grows louder. The glass begins to tremble. Then it explodes in a shimmering cascade of shards, broken by just the power of her voice. Jane Goodall, the famous chimpanzee expert, relates a story about a chimp who discovered that banging two empty gasoline cans together can make a terribly wonderful racket. In a few days of banging, the chimp had become the dominant male of the group. There is power in sound. How long has music been around? Nobody really knows, but we all suspect it's been with us from the beginning. To the left, example 5 on the website, is a picture of 35,000-year-old mastodon bones. Their resonance points are marked. These are places where it makes a great sound when you hit it. This bone xylophone was found with 2 bone flutes. Use your imagination to imagine what the very first musical experience was. It's fun to imagine, and you have as much chance of being correct as anyone. Being the creatures that we are, it was only a matter of time until we developed a written language that could record these rhythms and pitches so that others could make them too. Just like with language, music existed for a long, long time before it was written down, and some think music may have existed before spoken language. Back then, and now, music was taught by rote, which means copying what another has played or sung. No need to read music, just listen carefully and copy the sounds, the fingerings, or whatever. It's a method that takes a lot of time, but it works really well, and many, many people all over the world still learn songs this way. But with a system of writing music, a song can be shared with an audience far away, played by a musician who can read the lines and squiggles and dots created by someone she has never met. Writing down the bones. This Western tradition of written music, what you're about to learn, has only been in existence 1,000 years or so, and that's not very long in the grand scheme of things. Although it should be obvious, the Western classical musical tradition is only one of thousands of different traditions of music, most of which have no use for writing down sounds, and some musical traditions actively discourage written music. However, the Western system for reading and writing music has become pretty universal and very widespread. There are older traditions of written music, too. Ancient Hindus and then the Greeks made use of their alphabet to write out music. The Persians used numbers and a kind of staff with 9 lines between which the numbers were written. Chinese people used special signs for their pentatonic scales, and the earliest examples of written music come from musical notation on fragments of a stone tablet found in Garit, Syria, dated to around 1200 BCE. Over 1,500 years later, around 500 CE, comes the very first glimmer of written Western music. This system of notation evolved in Greek and Latin-speaking cultures, and they read from left to right. Music is also read from left to right and top to bottom. Boethius, a Roman poet and philosopher, wrote an important treatise on music in the early 6th century, De Institutione Musica. His treatise was republished in 1492, and was studied during the Middle Ages by monks throughout Europe. In the treatise, Boethius used Latin letters to represent musical sounds. Monks in the monasteries of the Catholic Church studied this treatise by Boethius and improved upon his idea for their own system. After a few hundred years, in addition to letter names for notes, monks invented a system of neumes, meaning sign in Greek. Neumes are squiggly little bits written above the text of a song, and they show note length, pitch, and movement from one pitch to the next. After a while, neumes began to be written on, above, or below a single line. The line represented a specific pitch. A neume written above the line was higher in pitch than a neume written below the line. Around 1000 CE, many innovations in written music came about, but it isn't exactly clear who invented them. Guido di Arezzo is given most of the credit. He was a Benedictine monk who was thrown out of his monastery for his radical innovations in music. It's believed that he didn't actually invent the staff, but contributed when he increased the lines from 2 to 4. And on this book's website, you can see in example 6, 7, 8, and 9 examples of this early written music. We're lucky he got kicked out of the monastery because it caused his ideas to be spread more widely. An early Streisand effect. After Arezzo had an audience with the Pope who recognized Guido's skill, his monastery wanted him back. Guido di Arezzo was definitely responsible for adding more lines to the staff, and he was also thought to have invented the Guidonian hand, a system for singing together. He would point to specific places on his upraised hand, each corresponding to a specific note. This allowed a large number of monks to sing together. Example 7 on the web shows a hand with notes listed from low to high, starting with the thumb. The chapter image, which you can also see on the website, is another example of the Guidonian hand, this one with staff lines. For a long time, music in the monastery was monophonic, which means it had only one part, usually vocal. All of the musical examples that survive from this time come from church. Of course, there were popular secular musicians around at the time making music, but they weren't writing down what they played, and so there's almost no record of it. The oldest written secular music in existence is Summer is a Cumin Inn, a song celebrating the coming of summer, also known as the Cuckoo Song. The song is a round that was written down somewhere between 1261 and 1264. One example of monophonic music is a type of song called a plain chant. Some of the very first examples of written Western music are plain chants. They sound more like inflection than singing, and are still used in Roman Catholic churches today. Eventually, all those monks got bored with singing one-line music and began to add other parts. Music in the monastery was becoming more complex, and the written notes needed to reflect that complexity. Music with more than one part, like a round, is called polyphonic music. Polyphonic music soon became popular in the monasteries, but it was difficult to write out with just one line. Because polyphonic music is more complex than monophonic music, it was necessary to add more lines to show the other voices. This is where Guido di Arezzo comes in. He expanded the staff to four lines, like example 9 that you can see on the website. Soon after that, a fifth line was added. Over the next 500 years, composers experimented with different systems for writing music. It was written in elaborate shapes, like the heart-shaped love song on the next page, Bel Bon Sage, written by Baud Codier in the 15th century. If you look at the image on the web, you'll see that some of the notes are colored bright red. Color was sometimes used to alter written notes. Red notes, in this case, get a different rhythm than uncolored notes. Experimentation also included an 8-line staff, like the one shown below in example 11. This could be lute tablature. By about 1500, we arrived at the system, no pun intended, that has remained nearly unchanged until today, the system you're about to learn. But the spirit of experimentation with written music still exists. Modern composers like John Cage, William McGinnis, or Stephen Reich use notation that is radically different from what you'll learn in this book, as you can see in example 12 and 13 on the book's website. However, those composers do make use of most of the musical symbols you're about to learn, like clefs, lines, and rhythms. Music, like any language, evolves over time. Maybe in another 1,000 years, we'll be reading music based on smells. Who knows? What do you think music will look like and sound like in another 1,000 years? Moving on. Up next, chapter 2, we're going to get into it with lines of the musical staff. Let's go.